Are you ready for the entertainment experience of a lifetime? Knockdown, Dragout, hard-hitting conversations, debates, and interviews. Well, if you said yes to any of these questions, sit back, relax, and enjoy something like no other. This is the Isolation Series Podcast, presented by the Scott Robles team at Douglas Elliman Real Estate, by WellbeingsPerformance.com for all your online meeting needs, by Barbarian Steakhouse, Canada's premier upscale restaurant. For more information, go to Barbarians.com. By ImprintPilates.com Toronto and the Greater Toronto Area's premier Pilates studio. And by the Toronto Immune and Digestive Health Institute. For more information, go to TIDHI.ca. Here now is your host, Spencer Miller.
Hey guys, and welcome to another edition of the Isolation Series with me, Spencer Miller. Very pleased to be joined, as always, by my co-host with the most, Paul Shields. And it is Thursday, February 8th, 2024. Paul, let's jump right in. So we're going to start with some news and notes today. And today is the National Basketball Association trade deadline at 4 p.m. Eastern. Sticking with more of a homegrown flavor right now, the Raptors, amidst one of their most difficult seasons in recent years, have added yet another bit of Canadian content. Veteran center Kelly Olynyk, who has had a great career, I believe he's 32 years of age now. They acquired him from the Utah Jazz. What do you think this does, if anything, for a struggling Raptors team to add another really good Canadian piece to their team?
Yeah, I mean, I think it keeps the team competitive. They're obviously trying to build around Scotty Barnes now. So, you know, definitely that big man presence has been, there are times on the Raptors season where you look on the floor and they're missing a presence in the middle of the floor. So I think he brings some of that too. I don't know much about the other player, the younger player that came in the deal, but I think, you know, this trade deadline is really going to be about shaping the Raptors for giving them flexibility for the offseason and shaping them for what next season will look like. But I don't know how much a deal like this helps the team in the here and now. But I think it's a good professional. It's great to have more Canadian content on the Raptors. It's always fun when Canadian players come to play for the only Canadian team in the league. I think it'll be a lot of fun.
Do you believe sort of what I've been hearing over the last few weeks, that amongst the sort of not so great season that the Raptors have endured up until this point, this could not be, this might not be as long of a retool or rebuild as people might have thought? Because I started thinking and I started reading about this, like I said, over the last few days, that Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster aren't necessarily the type to let a team get stripped down like this. Obviously, you need to do that when you have so many veterans and had Fred VanVleet leave for nothing in the offseason last year. I get all of that. But do you think that some of these moves are making it a little bit easier for their overall plan, maybe about bringing in a couple of other pieces that might help accelerate the rebuild?
Yeah, I don't know that, you know, Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster are tearing it down entirely to go like full rebuild mode. So my guess is they're trying to turn it around with some pace, right? And so this team can be competitive sooner rather than later. But it's always hard when you have a young team and you have a team that's been as inconsistent as the Raptors have been this year. There's not a whole lot to your foundation is just different, right? You're not looking at superstars. You're looking at or established superstars. You're looking at young superstars. You're looking at like Scotty Barnes, first all-star selection this season, and congratulations to him on that. But you know, you have to make your decisions and bet on the guys you believe are going to are going to take those next steps. And Barnes looks like that guy, but it's really hard to predict these, the way that these rebuilds or retools or whatever you want to call them work. But I don't, you know, even in today's trade, there's a draft pick going out. So that would lead me to believe that, you know, Webster and Ujiri are still looking for quality players that can keep this team competitive, you know, for the last bit of the season and into next year. So I think the trade, like I said, today's trade deadline is about creating cap space and understanding what their offseason will look like from a cost certainty point, and keeping this team hunting for a play-in, which, you know, I mean, you got to have, you have to have hope and you have to have that goal, but the more inconsistencies they show, the harder and harder that gets.
Well, definitely stay tuned to all the rest of the deals for the remainder of the day. I know that we are doing this prior to the deadline at 4 o'clock Eastern, but next time we come on the air, we will break down any more big trades that happen throughout the NBA today. Moving to another interesting news and notes thing around the world of sports. Yesterday, it came down that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. won his arbitration case with the Toronto Blue Jays and is now going to be making $19.9 million next year, as well as something similar to that for the final year of his contract in 2025. It has been very contentious throughout the arbitration process on both sides. And we know that the Blue Jays are no stranger to this because Bo Bichette said a couple of years ago that the arbitration that he went through was not very good either and whatnot. So do you believe that this puts even more urgency on Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro and that team to get something done now over the next 2 years, because we have been saying that it's time to show up, it's time to do stuff, it's time to prove things now. But when you potentially have a disgruntled player yet again, based on the way that you have positioned yourself as a front office, that can't be working in your favor too much.
Well, I've yet to meet the professional athlete who enjoyed their arbitration process, right? Like, it's not a fun time for a player. I would guess it's not really a fun time for the team either, right? The player is arguing for every cent that they can get, and the team is pointing out every single flaw and mistake you made in an effort to not pay you, you know, or not to overpay, right? So, I don't know. I think it is a business at the end of the day, and I think that we all know that, and I think players understand that better than everybody. But of course, people are human. It's hard. It can be really challenging to go through processes like that. So I will say in defense of Shapiro and Atkins and the Blue Jays management is Vladdy Jr. had the opportunity to make this really easy. He has an incredible breakout season a couple years ago. He looks like the next big thing, you know, in young, like, franchise-changing baseball players. And unfortunately for him, he follows it up with two pretty lackluster seasons. So from a Blue Jays management perspective, are we getting, you know, a Vladdy who's pushing for, you know, the team home run, single-season home run record, a Vladdy that can hit in big moments and get, you know, the team over the hump? Or are we paying for a Vladdy that's a 30 home run guy who's going to, you know, who's not great defensively at first base? So I think you have to, you know, you have to make those decisions. You have to make some hard ones. So Vladdy has a chance to come out and prove everybody right or wrong, depending on what side of the argument you come down on. And then you hope that they can talk extension if that makes sense. But I don't necessarily disagree with the Blue Jays sort of having to flex some of the leverage that they have in a situation like this, because the truth is Vladdy has not made it easy to figure out what exactly he will be moving forward.
I agree with you completely on some aspects of what you just said. I mean, we've talked about it here on the program multiple times where the league adjusted to him after he hit those 48 home runs. Let's not forget that he hit half of them at Salem Field in Buffalo that year as well as Dunedin. No excuse, that's just the way that it was. But the league adjusted to him, and Vladdy has not adjusted back to the league because I don't think Vladdy is a very motivated person to get his game to where it can be. Like we've seen on multiple occasions throughout his career that he is a very lazy lackluster. I'm just going to let my raw talent do what it needs to do. And unless you are a very special case, like I'm talking very rare case, you need to work at your craft all the time. We talk about that with every sport, every job on the planet. You can't be complacent. You can't settle. You always need to evolve. And Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is not one of those individuals from an offensive perspective, at least in my opinion, up until now. Where I don't agree with you a little bit is Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s defense at first base has become tremendous over the last two seasons.
Totally disagree. The numbers all ban out. He's the worst first baseman statistically in the American League. How is it tremendous? Show me tremendous. It's mediocre at best.
He won a gold glove.
I don't know. He was not very good last year. Or he's not been very he's been bad in big moments. And there as far as this, there are a bunch of statistics that would put him at the bottom. So I don't know, man.
Okay, switching gears yet again. I want to get your thoughts quickly on the Toronto Maple Leafs. They took on a Dallas Stars team last night, who is no joke. We know that in the National Hockey League over the last handful of seasons. But it was a very entertaining game, especially in the beginning part of the third period where they scored three goals, I believe, in a total of 54 seconds. So what do you take away from the game for the Maple Leafs, if anything?
I think that they stayed in a tough game against a tough team. And I think – so there's a couple things that I take away. One – the core four have scored the last 10 Maple Leaf goals. So, you know, Matthews, Marner, Nylander, Tavares, some combination of those four players have scored the last 10 goals for the Leafs. So I would love to see a little bit more secondary scoring. And, I'd like to see a little bit of contribution from some other players. However, you have to feel good seeing the top end talent really shining through. And in a game like last night, I think it's good for a goalie like Samsonov to win a game when he's not at his absolute best. He's been very good since returning to the team. He's played some steady goaltending, some NHL caliber goaltending, which unfortunately we haven't been able to say about Samsonov. We hadn't been able to say at the beginning of the season. So it's nice for him to win a game where he's not standing on his head, getting a shutout, where the Leafs can outscore a little bit of inconsistency. So look, to be very clear, every goalie is going to have games when they don't play their best, just like any other player. So it was nice to see him get a win when I think if you asked him that wasn't his best performance since he came back, certainly wasn't a bad performance. He certainly didn't play poor. But that's a confidence builder when as a goalie, you realize you don't have to be perfect every night. And again, Austin Matthews is on a tear. William Nylander breaks a slump, gets two goals. Tavares has got goals in back-to-back games now. So a lot of good things coming out of a win over Dallas. I think it's their sixth win in a row against Dallas too, which is really funny. Hard to pinpoint why that happens sometimes, but, yeah, it's a good game. Dallas is a good team. Glad the Leafs were able to stay in it.
We know that sports can be fickle at times for players. I want to get your thoughts on a point that you just made. William Nylander scored a couple goals last night and looked like
The Willie Nylander that we saw at the vast majority of the beginning of the year. We know that you can't keep up a tremendous clip to the pace that he was doing, where he scored in the first 35 of at least 38 games or something crazy like that. But what do you think it is that has sort of taken his energy out since signing that huge contract? Because, yes, you know, he is a remarkable talent, and that's why he ended up getting that contract. But it seems like he was just playing for the contract. And then as soon as it was signed, he started squeezing the stick, as they say, or whatever the case may be, where you would think that it would be the opposite, that you would be squeezing the stick and pressing necessarily before signing a big contract.
See, I don't much like the Vladdy conversation, and you know whether he wants to try or not. I'm not qualified to psychoanalyze players. I don't think it has anything to do with the contract. There's, if you want to get into the brain science of it, there's tons of things that say the amount of money that you make is not directly correlated to the performance you provide. It's just simple. We do that as fans and as, you know, people who talk about the game, and you know, media does that. But for a person, I think hockey is a tough game at times. It's a really unfair game at times. I think he, like William Nylander, has been doing a lot of the things that he has done or was doing at the beginning of the year, and the bounces just weren't going. Last night, he had a lot of jump in his step. He had a lot of jump in his step, you know, heading into the All-Star break as well. He started to look a little bit more confident, like the player that was scoring at the pace he was scoring at to start the season. And Nylander is, I would say, more in the traditional mold of a goal scorer who, like Austin Matthews, is nearly automatic. You know, he's one of the most consistent goal scorers in the game, right? When you think of goal scorers who are consistent, you're thinking Matthews, you're thinking Draisaitl, you know, a guy like Nathan MacKinnon. These guys score almost every other game, it feels like. And some cases more than that. Nylander will be a little bit more streaky. He's got a little bit of that goal scorer in him, where if he gets one or two, he'll probably get, you know, 5-7 or, you know, something like that, 7-10 kind of goal scoring streaks. Yeah. But if he doesn't get one, then, you know, he can go 2, 3, 4 games without getting one. So that's where you just got to keep doing the right things. I'm a huge fan of William Nylander. I know he has his critics, but I think he does a lot of things really well. And I have no doubt that obviously 40 is in sight again for another year. I think that if you can bank on, you know, 35 to 45 goals from a player like William Nylander every year, he'll be making that money, and it'll be worth it time after time.
What do you think is going through the mindset of your captain in John Tavares now in recent days? Because we know that the back-to-back versus Winnipeg before the NHL All-Star game, he got off the schneid, so to speak, after a long drought, and that he's been doing very well. He did very well. Last night, yet again, you made the point earlier about them scoring in the core four, the last 10 goals seemingly for this team, but specifically for your captain. It has to really switch your mindset and be like, okay, I can still play at this level and I can still be an effective captain, even though we all know that we all love John Tavares and the way that he carries himself on and off the ice. Just from a pure performance and competitive standpoint, that has to be somewhat similar to what's going through his head at this point.
I don't think Tavares ever doubted his ability to play in this league. He's one of the most consistent players on the planet. He has been for his whole career. Getting off any pointless streak or goalless streak is going to help your confidence and keep guys, you know, help to switch the mindset, keep them on the positive side of that mindset. But I mean, he's been a good captain for this team. He's done almost everything you could ask in a captain for the Toronto Maple Leafs. He does a lot of the little things that you have to do to be a good pro. I think that he's a goal scorer. He consistently has scored goals in this league, found ways to do it his whole career. So it's got to feel good. But I think there's a lot of tank gas left in the tank of John Tavares. And I think that if he was playing in any other market, we would not be talking about this decline or demise or whatever, you know, the narrative is around John Tavares. He's a very good player and has been a very good player for a long time.
Okay. And last but certainly not least, on the hockey front, because we are a month away from the NHL trade deadline, respectively, I just want to get your thoughts. Do you believe that Sidney Crosby, for the first time in his career, will be in a different sweater at the end of the trade deadline? Because although he's shown an unbelievable loyalty to the Pittsburgh Penguins organization throughout his entire career, I could see a Ray Bourque situation where he goes to a different team to chase one more cup, even though he doesn't necessarily need to. Just from a competitive standpoint, once again, I could see Sidney Crosby being one of the biggest chips moved at the deadline.
I don't see that. As of today, Pittsburgh is 6 points out of five points out of a playoff spot with three games in hand and four games in hand on the teams they're chasing. So there, and as far as their division goes, they're a similar situation. They've got four games in hand on a Philadelphia team that they're only behind by 5 points. Now, to be very clear, I don't think the Penguins are a playoff team, and I don't think they're making it. I think ultimately the wheels will fall off of this. I just don't like the way that team is constructed. But they did not bring in Carlson in the offseason. They did not, push sign players like Graves and Achari and, you know, these professional level players to not take another run at it, right? We know the end is coming at one time or another, regardless of how amazing Crosby has been this year. You know, he is in the twilight of his career. Malkin is there, Letang is there. And I think that this season they are going to do everything they can to get into the playoffs. They're going to do everything they can to punch their ticket and see if they can get Sid one more cup in Pittsburgh. But I just don't think they're far enough out. While I don't believe they're going to make the playoffs, I think a lot of people will share that sentiment. I don't think you're going to sell that to that team. I don't think that the ownership group, you know, after going out and spending all that money and whatnot on Carlson, I don't think they're looking for, a rebuild or a sell-off at the deadline this year. So I don't see Sidney Crosby going anywhere this season. I think it's way too complex of a deal to do at the trade deadline as well. And like you said, this is not Ray Bourque. Ray Bourque was chasing his only Stanley Cup, right? Like Pittsburgh or Sidney Crosby's won three now. So and he's been to four finals, right? So I don't see it the same. And the loyalty to that team, I think, is too deep. And I just think that they still believe that there's a chance they're making the playoffs.
I'm just curious also, where would you put Sidney Crosby on your Mount Rushmore of hockey? We know that he's been one of the most consistent and one of the most effective players throughout his entire career, despite missing 2.5 years with those concussion issues and whatnot a number of years ago. He's still been able to put up tremendous numbers, and they would be even better if he did not miss that time. But to me, he seems like one of the most underrated, greatest players of the generation that we have ever seen, because he just goes about his business. And people acknowledge that Sidney Crosby is still great and putting up great numbers this season at the age that he is, but it's not with the fanfare of necessarily a Ovechkin over the last couple of years or, you know, any number of other superstars. So Sidney Crosby, to me, has been under the radar for a guy who should be considered one of the greatest of all time.
I think he is. I think he's in that conversation. I don't like if we're talking Mount Rushmore, I don't know if I put him in the top four players of all time, but I think that an argument is there. He's won everything at every level, at everywhere to win. He's, you know, been a consistent point producer at the highest level. He was the face of the league, and his rivalry with Ovechkin and Caps and Penguins were basically carried the league post lockout and really brought a new face to the NHL. So I think that when it's all said and done, he's going to be talked about in line with the greatest of all time. I don't see him as being underrated. I think that people maybe underestimated just how committed a player he is to being as great as he is. And so as he's gotten younger, or as he's gotten older, excuse me, I think that the spotlight shifts to younger players. I think that's just sort of natural. But he's been, I mean, he's been incredible this year. What else could you possibly say? Right. So I think he has to be in that conversation when it's all said and done. I think he's definitely in that conversation.
If you are Doug Armstrong and Hockey Canada getting together and putting together your team for the Olympics, do you consider putting a 39-year-old or potentially almost 40-year-old Sidney Crosby on that roster?
I think it all that's, you know, we're still talking about 2 years away, right? So you have to assess it at the time. We know what these drop-offs are like, right? We know what happens as players get older. You know, one season they seem to have it and it can fall off. Ovechkin is a great example, right? He looked so good last year. He looked like he was going to be automatic 35, 40 goals right to the end of his career. And I think he's got 8 goals this year, right? And we're more than halfway through a season. He's on like an 18-goal pace or something. So these things happen. If Sidney Crosby is still playing anywhere near this type of level, I think he would be incredible to have on a team like that. I think you just have to be realistic about the role he would play there. I think that, while I don't know that there are 4 better centers in the NHL right now, that could very easily change by the time 2026 rolls around. There are some darn good players in the country of Canada playing at the center ice position. That it's going to make it a really interesting choice when that comes around. So again, if he's playing anything like he's playing this year, then there's absolutely a spot for him. But I think that you have to be a little heartless when it comes to these international tournaments, when you're trying to pick the best players from your country. That's it gets tougher and tougher.
Yes. And switching gears, I want to get your thoughts on something that we didn't cover earlier on in the week. What are your thoughts, if any, on the announcement coming down that they made the schedule for the 2026 World Cup of Soccer that is going to be taking place in Mexico, the United States, and Canada, respectively? I believe Canada gets a total of 13 games split between Vancouver and Toronto and New York and Mexico. Get the other games, if I remember correctly, as well. Any thoughts on the schedule breakdown? Because I know you might have seen it and had a couple of thoughts as you were glancing by it.
I don't have a ton of thoughts on like where the games are played. I think it's incredibly exciting. It's obviously, you know, the biggest sporting event in the world. It is truly a global sporting event, which is amazing. So I'm excited that they've been announced. I'm excited that it's going to be, you know, they're going to have so much representation in Canada and so much time here. But the reality is I'll be most excited when the games are happening. I think these announcements create anticipation. But as far as like where they chose and the cities they're playing and things like that, I don't have a whole lot to say about it. I just want to, I'm just looking forward to the games. I'm happy it's coming.
Right. And speaking of games that we're looking forward to, we are now just a couple of days away from Super Bowl 58 taking place in Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas, Nevada. It has been quite the week so far leading up to the Super Bowl. But all the storylines, all the smoke, everything is going to be cleared in just a short period of time from now, like I said. When it comes down to the brass tacks of it, as I'm looking at it right now, the San Francisco 49ers are favored by 2.5 as we record this program on Thursday, February 8th, 2024. What are your thoughts going into Super Bowl 58? And do you agree with the San Francisco 49ers essentially winning by a field goal?
Well, I understand why they're the favorites, and I think that I think that this is the year. I just don't – it's hard to bet against Kansas City. We know this. They've made fools of many a pundit, particularly in this playoff run. I just wonder when the injuries are going to catch up with them. And
particularly us as well, by the way.
Oh yeah, for sure. And like, I think a lot of people had that because this team has been so good for so long. It's sometimes hard to, you know, it's hard to imagine this role could keep on going. So, but I also don't know that they've played a team of the quality of San Francisco yet. Like they were with the exception of the 3-game losing streak, thanks to basically everyone being injured. This team has been nearly unstoppable this year. So I think it really is. I think it's a different story from the last time these two teams played. I think you're looking at a Kansas City team that's relying on their defense a lot more than they once did. A San Francisco team with just so much offensive firepower that they're going to try and win the game on the offensive side of the ball, but you can't count out Mahomes. You can't count out Kelsey. I think the 2.5-point line is probably just about perfect because this feels to me like a heavyweight fight that's going to come down to a last minute field goal or a final drive. So while I agree and I would take the favorites in San Francisco, I think we're in for a hell of a game.
Okay. And another interesting thing about this is the Kansas City Chiefs going to Sunday Super Bowl matchup, looking to go back to back for the first time since the Patriots did it in 2003-04, I believe. That is one of the storylines. But my question to you is this. If they win on Sunday, the Kansas City Chiefs, somehow they find a way to win again and go back to back, I believe in my heart of hearts that we can put them in the conversation of dynasty as the Patriots were in the early 2000s when they went 4-5 years or 3-4 years, whatever it was. But if they lose, I believe that narrative changes. And we can just say that this is a great era of football because they are very similar to the Buffalo Bills. However, the difference is Buffalo never was able to win a Super Bowl in 4 straight appearances, where Kansas City, as of right now, even if they lose, they still have won 2 in the last 5 years or whatever it is.
Yeah, I mean, I think Kansas City is incredible. I think their legacy is already told. And you say the only difference is the winning. Like, that's a huge, huge difference, right? Buffalo hasn't even really had a sniff, and Kansas City has basically been a perennial Super Bowl prediction from the moment Mahomes got there. So that's, you know, we're talking about greatness at a different level. You know, we talked a little bit about this on the last show. It seems like the narrative has sort of changed. I think people are getting a little bit of the Tom Brady syndrome with Mahomes and Kansas City. But they don't boo you because you're bad, right? Or they don't switch on you because you're not winning games. People are tired of seeing them win. So I think that regardless of what happens, you're looking at someone who will be in the conversation for greatest of all time. I don't think he's there yet. I think he's in the conversation. I think Brady is absolutely the greatest of all time, but another Super Bowl win and another good team solidifies his spot in that conversation for sure.
And he'll be the first quarterback in NFL history to win 3 Super Bowls before the age of 30, because Tom Brady did it at the age of 30 years and 100 and some odd days.
Yeah, which is, you know, again, it's amazing. And there's when you're talking about stats like that, when you're talking about anybody who is the first of something, you know, that amazing in the NFL, you're talking about a great, great player who should be talked about in a similar light as guys like Brady and Manning and, you know, other amazing quarterbacks of in NFL history.
Okay, well, I'm going to hate to do this to you, Paul, but I am going to do it to you because it is Super Bowl 58. What is your score prediction for Sunday's game?
I think it's going to be a little higher scoring affair. I'm thinking like a 28-24, or something like that, even 31-28. But I'm going to, I think there's going to be some points scored. I think I'll go 49ers 31-28.
And I believe it's going to be somewhat similar. I'm going to go 49ers 27-24. Is there anything on this Thursday, February 8th, 2024 edition of the show that we haven't covered that we should, my friend?
You know, I think just to say, we had a really great chat early in the week about WWE and WrestleMania plans and The Rock returning and all of that. The WrestleMania press conference is happening today at the T-Mobile Center in Las Vegas. For any of fans of sports entertainment, of wrestling, of WWE, I think we might get some answers as to who's facing who on what night at WrestleMania, what The Rock and Roman and Cody and Seth and all of the major players, what that could look like. So I think we're going to get some answers finally tonight. And I'm looking forward to seeing what happens at that press conference.
On that same note, we know that it's on Peacock and the WWE social media platforms respectively, but are you at all familiar as to whether or not they're going to carry it on the WWE network in Canada? If you don't know the answer to that, that is totally fine. And subsequently, do you remember what time it's going to be airing on the East Coast?
I believe it's 8 o'clock East Coast. So it was at 5 o'clock in Vegas. But I don't know. I would assume it's going to be on the WWE network in Canada. It would just make sense, right? Peacock is exclusive to the United States. So it's typically they run those events on WWE network here in Canada, but it is hard to say. The WWE has done some interesting things with their streaming and the huge deal they just signed with Netflix. So yeah, I think that that's what we'll be looking forward to, is seeing that. Oh, hang on. Looks like I'm just searching the WWE Twitter here, and it is on the WWE network. It's 7 o'clock Eastern. So that will be very interesting to see what happens. See what happens at that kickoff, and see what the road to WrestleMania will look like from here on out.
And are you interested to see how The Rock reacts live in front of the audience when he inevitably gets booed when he comes out during the press conference? I'm not saying for sure that is going to happen, but based on the vitriol reaction, like we talked about earlier in the week, I'm interested to see how he reacts live in front of the fans that show up there, and with everybody else in there, and with Roman necessarily feeding off of that crowd as well, because how can you not?
I think that I personally think that I don't think whether he expected the response or not, and how could you not expect some backlash just based on everything that's sort of happened. I think The Rock is more interested in views and how many people are watching over if he gets booed or cheered. I think he knows how passionate wrestling fans are. He knows what this could look like. He's seen it happen, right? He's been in the ring when the expectation was that he was going to get cheered against Hulk Hogan, and he got absolutely booed in what has become an unbelievably classic match. So I don't know. I think that he'll roll with whatever it is. I just think that, you know, WWE has a lot of work to do. If this was all a work and they were just doing this to, you know, raise Cody's star power or give him like this Daniel Bryan type feeling, I think they've got a lot of work to do. And I think it starts tonight. And if Cody does not factor into this WrestleMania versus Roman Reigns in one way or another, I think they've got some heavy, heavy lifting to figure out how to tell this story so that people continue to care about, well, basically any of the stories they tell, because this The Rock inserting himself into this has created a cluster of highest regard. So we'll see. And I'm looking forward to today's press conference, because I think that'll start to give us some direction anyway.
What do you believe the chances are on something that we talked about earlier in the week as well about Roman Reigns pulling double duty potentially where he faces The Rock in one of the main events on Saturday and then the winner goes on to face Cody on Sunday to keep the fans happy and let Cody quote unquote still finish the story, which I would also find very intriguing that if they let Roman go away for a little bit and The Rock win the belt, at least for one night, it would still be interesting to me for Cody to take the belt off The Rock.
Now, I think the story has to be The Rock, Cody beating Roman. The Rock beating Roman doesn't do anything for anybody but The Rock. And again, I don't know the guy. I think to be in the level and the position that he's been in, I think there has to be some ego and some arrogance. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I think you have to have some ego and a tremendous amount of confidence to do what these guys do at the highest level. But I think that doesn't make any sense for The Rock to beat Roman. If The Rock's beating Roman, it's in the Sunday night main event, and they're going to be telling a very different story about a different part-timer who's now the champion. I think if you want to finish Cody Rhodes' story, it has to be against Roman Reigns. Now, I did see something interesting, and I forget who tweeted this out, but at every decade anniversary of WrestleMania, there's been a multi-man match for the championship in one way or another. Starting right at WrestleMania 10, when both Bret and Lex Luger had to fight twice, right? Bret versus Owen, Lex versus Yoko, and then ultimately Bret versus Yoko. WrestleMania 20 had a triple threat. WrestleMania 30 had a triple threat. So if the plan all along was a triple threat, then Cody's promo the Friday after the Royal Rumble makes no sense, and it's a blatant change in direction. And if not, then WWE and TKO just stick to their guns and they risk alienating the Cody fans and going with Rock and Roman. That's a possibility. I literally think everything is on the table. I don't think they expected the negative reaction to The Rock. And I think that they have been scrambling to come up with a better story ever since.
Right. And if you were also WWE, I know the plan is to still hopefully have Seth Rollins available and his knee be good enough to go. But we have seen stranger things, and your ACL, MCL is no joke to deal with, obviously. Do you believe that we will see Seth Rollins defend the belt, or will they have to pivot, in your opinion, because he won't be able to get back in a relatively short timeline?
Seth Rollins is not missing WrestleMania. I think they'd have to chop his leg off. That's my thought. I think that they probably have plan A, B, and C, because like you said, knees are tricky things and things happen. But you know, we remember a few years ago when he was returning from a knee injury and building the story with Triple H, that was dicey too, that he was going to make it back. But he's shown before his ability to grind through the pain of physical therapy to get back to WrestleMania. It's still a marquee dream spot for, you know, a lot of professional wrestlers, sports entertainers, whatever you want to call them. We've even got reports of Okada, you know, from New Japan, who's a free agent now, talking about how his dream is to be at WrestleMania one day, right? So this is not just a WWE thing. WrestleMania matters to the wrestling world, and it matters to these performers. I do not see Seth Rollins missing Mania. I do not see him staying on the injured list through that. I think he'd have something incredibly serious and problematic would have to happen, but they're obviously being very careful with him. They're not doing basically any physicality with him on Raw. They're keeping him away from any potential setbacks in that recovery. So I think he's going to be just fine. I think he's going to be there.
Only time will tell. But for Paul Shields, I am Spencer Miller. This has been your Isolation Series episode edition for February 8th, 2024, Thursday. And we do hope you enjoy your weekend, whatever it is that you are getting up to, especially in culminating on Sunday with Super Bowl 58. It is the San Francisco 49ers taking on the Kansas City Chiefs. We are almost there. It is almost collision time.
Enjoy it, whoever it is that you cheer for, and we'll be back with you on Monday to break everything down. But until then, take care of yourselves and each other. Bye-bye.
And Paul, please tell people all about some more whole grain goodness that is us.
Folks, be sure to check us out on podbean.com by going to theisolationseries.podbean.com. There you'll find the audio-only versions of the podcast, including all of our past amazing interviews. One more time, that's theisolationseries.podbean.com. And hey, don't forget to follow us on Instagram. It's at @vspencermiller and at Pauly Shields, Pauly spelled P-A-W-L-Y. So find us on podbean.com, follow us on Instagram, and don't forget to like, share, and subscribe.
And once again, everybody, thank you for watching and or listening and supporting this thing we like to call the Isolation Series. For Paul Shields, I am Spencer Miller, and we will see you again very, very soon. Bye-bye.